Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, everyone. This is Brian Sons, also known as Onyx. This is Onyx Knights Paranormal Radio. Tonight, great show lineup. Survivor Man Les Stroud. If the music didn't get you stoked, having him on here will. It is a great honor and a pure pleasure to have him as a guest tonight. We're going to be talking Sasquatch. We're going to be talking about what Les has coming up in the future regarding his Survivor Man Bigfoot episodes. And it's sure to be a great show. Thank you guys for tuning in. I have to say happy birthday to my stepson, Brady, 16 years old today. I promised him I'd say it on the show, with Les on the show, so he could have that for all time. My co-host tonight is going to be Michael Hall. Those who listen regularly, you're aware of Michael Hall. He's a good friend of mine. He's a member of my team. He's also a well-known actor. He's got an upcoming movie, Something in the Woods. Check it out on Facebook. He'll give that whole spiel. Anyway, we've got to jump into this because we only have Les for a limited amount of time. He has some engagements that he has to take care of. But with that being said, I'm going to bring Michael on. Michael, are you there?
I'm here. Hey, I'm here, man. I'm ready to go.
I know. I'm stoked, too. Anything you want to get out real quick before we get on with Les?
No, man, let's jump right into the meat of it all. And,
let's do it, too.
Bring our guest on there, man.
All right, guys, we present to you Survivor Man Les Stroud.
Hey, Les, how you doing?
Oh, man. Doing great. Thank you
good.
So
well,
much.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Oh, no, thank you. I mean, it's a pleasure. It's all mine. And I also have to say thanks to Michael for lining everything up for me.
Yeah, you're welcome.
What was that, sir?
I said Mike's a persistent character. He kept it up. He kept the communication up, and here we are. Now, it's a real pleasure to be on the show, and I'm looking forward to a lot of work this year. A lot of stuff coming up. If you follow me on Facebook, I've been throwing out these teases here and there of what I've got coming up, and I still got a couple more announcements yet, but I think it was about two and a half weeks ago I sort of made the official announcement that I will be heading out and filming more Survivor Man Bigfoot. So it's going to be a very busy year for me.
Yeah, what I'd like to do is
one
thing I've watched your show for the longest time. My children have watched it. I love what you do. I love how you do it. The fact that there's no large camera crew with you, it's just you out there on your own. It's awesome. And what I always want to know is how did you go from being Les Stroud to being Les Stroud's Survivor Man?
Well, I mean, for anything like that, you know, if you hindsight being 2020, you can look in that rearview mirror and you can sort of see how all the chips fell and how everything fell into place to be where you are at this moment. And that's definitely the case for me. I mean, I grew up young watching. I didn't have a wilderness existence. I didn't have, you know, adventurous parents or anything like that. I grew up in the suburbs of West End of Toronto, Ontario, up in Canada, and, you know, listening to Styx and Supertramp and getting into trouble. But one of the things that stuck with me from an early childhood was, of course, I was a child of the television. It was the 70s, so, you know, I grew up watching TV. But the two of my greatest enjoyments of television was Jacques Cousteau films and Tarzan movies. And, you know, as life carries on, I ended up also discovering rock and roll at about age 13, 14. So, I mean, I spent a good portion of my younger, teenage years and into my young adulthood hang on a second. My son's just poking his head in the room. Hang on a second. Yeah. I'm on a radio interview. I'll talk to you in a bit. How about that for a teenage boy?
By the way,
I've got to, sorry, go ahead. You wanted to interrupt there? Go ahead.
Uh, w- we're very happy to learn of your son's recovery.
Thank you very much. It's been a long haul, about six months or so, and he's in full remission and doing well and gaining weight and growing hair back and putting some muscle on again. So that's been a long haul, and as a matter of fact, that kind of pushed a lot of. I would have been filming probably 2 months ago were it not for that situation with Logan. It was called AML leukemia, and we're definitely marching forward. And he's here with me tonight, as you can tell.
That's awesome.
But as I was saying, I was in, you know, into rock and roll. But when I quit rock and roll in sort of a fit of disillusionment in the mid '80s, because I just hated the music of the '80s. I think the Thompson Twins sent me out of the music industry. I stood there wondering, well, what am I going to do now? That's all I did for 10 years was focus on rock and roll, and instantly I knew that wilderness adventure. I didn't even know what that meant. I just knew the phrase of like wilderness adventure. I got to get some wilderness adventure. And the very first thing I ever saw was a tiny little ad for a survival course. And I thought, well, that sounds perfect. And I went there, and I'm telling you, from the first half hour of the first night, I was in love, you know, and I just thought, this is for me. And I never really looked back, but this very long story caught up to date now. What happened was, the creative juices that are within me, the desire to be an artist and to perform and to write, and because I'd done a lot of work in rock videos when I was a musician, I thought I could be filming these adventures. And back in those days, not much. There was Warren Miller ski films and not much else. And I thought I could do this, you know. And it just occurred to me that it would be such a cooler way to teach survival rather than just say, here is the fire bow and do a home video. I thought, well, I'll actually go out and actually survive and film it. And I made a cold call to a television network and said, here's my idea, 7 days alone, I'll bring you back this Odyssey on film, and right place, right time. And as they say, that was 2001. The rest is history.
Man, and it took off. It boomed. I mean, like I said, I've been following you all along, and I love the show. I love the show. In fact,
well, thank you very much.
Earlier tonight, my 4-year-old, I was prepping the music, and she's like, I know that music, and I showed you her picture, showed her your picture, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be talking to him, and she was just all stoked about it.
Well, that's been the beautiful thing of the series is it's I've been told too many times, even remember now, by, you know, someone come up and say, you know, your show is the only show my whole family will sit down and watch together, from the young
to
the old. That's a wonderful, wonderful thing for me to hear, a wonderful compliment. And and I came by it very honestly. I mean, I'm a survival instructor. I was into wilderness survival. I was into the wilderness and the woods. So for me, that's what it was. That's where it started, and that's where it still is, and that's why, you know, I mean, it basically spurred on, it spark-plugged a whole genre of TV now. We call survival TV, And yet no one's been able to really do what I do because they're not there to teach. They're there to make TV shows. I've always been there to teach. That's what it's all about.
Well, yeah, and no one's thus far holds a candle to what you do and how you do it. And the fact that, like you said, it is family friendly. I think that has a lot to do with its endurance.
I agree. Yes, well, thank you very kindly.
Now you are getting into the subject of Sasquatch, Bigfoot,
uh-huh.
One of my favorite subjects. Let's talk a little bit. I know that you previously mentioned a few experiences that you had, but I kind of got the idea that there was more experience that you had that you haven't mentioned yet. Am I correct in assuming that?
Yeah. Well, plus it's, you know, once you start reading the accounts and then you start putting two and two together and you go, wait a minute. And
right.
You start thinking about things, you know, you think, remember that time on that camping trip when the thing happened? You just start doing that, and of course, a lot of that could just be faulty memory. But, I mean, it really started early. I was on a survival weekend, just myself and my friend, and I'll never forget. And, you know, you let things go. Even the huge thing that happened in Alaska with me that, you know, I spoke about on Joe Rogan and Opie and Anthony and all these radio
right.
shows and so on, I mean, That I just put in the back of my mind and forgot about for years. But the first one that I let go for years was being in a survival shelter, my buddy's around the berm hill on the other side. He's already fallen asleep, and I find out later. And I hear these, you know, three or four shrill screams, like a woman being tortured in a satanic ritual. I mean, it freaked the heck out of me. And I got up, and I went over to my buddy Dutch. I said, "Did you hear that?" And woke up, and he says, "No, I'm sleeping, right? Got a pump." And you know how much time I spend in the bush? And I said, "I'm not staying here tonight. There's no way." And, you know, I just sort of wrote it off to maybe porcupines fighting or something like that. And
was this you before you actually became Survivor Man and started doing it on your own?
Long before. I mean, as I said, I taught survival for many years before I could get serious. And,
yeah,
because
I was going to say, you're pretty badass now. I mean, you go out everywhere by yourself.
Yeah, well, I don't know about badass, but I describe myself as just a big pussy because I do everything with pretty much calculated risks. You know, I'm not an adrenaline junkie. You know, and you know, survival is never about that. Survival is about surviving and taking care and doing things
right.
cautiously and not being an adrenaline junkie. And so, yeah, I'm really careful about what I do, but it's also experience now. I feel at home in the bush. It doesn't take me long to get my bush legs. You know, you get your sea legs and so on. Well, it doesn't take me long to, you know, one, two nights, maybe by the third night, I'm like, you know, by the first night, I'm like listening to the cracks and thinking there's a black bear everywhere. And by the third night, I'm, you know, walking out half naked into the bush and not even taking a flashlight. It's I'm comfortable out there. I love it out there.
I totally understand what you're saying. I research here. I go out, try to go out at least every night. And I'm out there by myself, and a lot of people are like, "Well, why are you out there by yourself?" I know the area. I go out there during the day. The same thing's out there during the day that is at night, and chances are, even though you don't see it, it still knows you're there.
Yeah, one of my favorite sayings is just, you got to know that every time you're in the wilderness, something is watching you. There's always something watching you. It might just be the spider on the branch, but something is watching
that's,
you.
That's 100% right. Correct. You know, you were telling a little bit about your encounter, and we kind of got a little sidetracked there.
Okay. That's right. So I had the screaming account that I left the bush. I had when I spent a year living in the bush, and I did the film Snowshoes in Solitude. That's about a year I lived in the bush with my wife at the time, and we did it as if it was 500 years ago. No metal, no matches, no plastic, no nylon, and during that year we heard a large, bipedal something walk towards, at this point we were scouting, so we actually were in a tent, and walk towards the tent, and you could hear that, you know, shh, 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 and yeah, it didn't sound like any bear or moose, and I've listened to them walk, and I regret this to this day. I just so should have unzipped and poked my head out, but I had an instant feeling of spookiness, and I was instantly creeped out. I'm not usually creeped out, but I want to see that bear, you know, but I was creeped a bit. And so I did what I often do, and I sort of hollered out, and I'll holler out to a bear, "Hey, over here." And I did that, and it stopped, and it turned, and it walked away in the other direction. And I never got to see what it was, but I can tell you it was big, it was heavy, and it walked on 2 feet. And we were in the middle of nowhere. There was no hunting there, nothing. We were small plane flight a long ways from any other people. And that was number two, you know. And number three was, of course, in Alaska, and that one was over the top with the gorilla sounds and the grunting and the tree smashing and all of that.
I was going to say that was the first time I even heard you speak was, I think it was on the Joe Rogan radio show, and you were talking about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was actually Open Anthony was the very first time. You know what happened is I just never bothered to talk about these things, you know. And then Open Anthony said, "Hey, have you ever seen Bigfoot?" You know, and you know they're just rock jocks, you know, having fun
right.
with it. But I'm an honest guy. I talk the truth, and as much as I can. And I thought to myself in a split second, I thought, yeah, why not? And so I tell them the story of what happened in Alaska, not thinking anything of it. Well. That has spurred on, it's been a slow grow of what they call a buzz, I guess they'd call it, and it just keeps growing and growing until all of a sudden I was getting a lot of contacts about that, and then the Joe Rogan one put it over the top. And so now, you know, I found myself in this position where a lot of people are asking me about Bigfoot, and it just sounded to me like a no-brainer. I thought, wait a minute. So who could really go out there and do this? There are a lot of great people doing it, but, I mean, who could really go out there and do this and make a TV show and film it? Well, I can. That's what I do. You know, that's what Survivor Man does. You know, I sort of go into the third person mode here, but that's what Survivor Man's all about. And I thought, you know, this would be intriguing for me, exciting for me. And I know I've got my experiences and my questions, so I pitched to do Survivor Man Bigfoot. And I mean, honestly, it took me 3 years to convince the networks to let me go out and try it. And here
we
are.
Wow. Yeah, I think it's a match made in heaven, and the fact that it took 3 years for them to realize it is wow.
Well, you know, big machines move slow, but I mean, I hate to put on my producer's hat or my you know, television hat for the moment, but you know, think about it. Survivor Man and Bigfoot, those are two brands that belong together.
That's right.
Yeah, so from that angle, I thought I'm going to go for this. I like this; it's fun for me. And I can tell you, I've taken flack for it. You can imagine. I know you guys have probably taken flack.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know? I put out a couple of disclaimers that already.
Well, it's. I think it just comes with the territory, I used to get mad and try to argue with people and everything else until finally I got to the point where it's like, I'm not, you know, I don't care what you think at all. I know what I've seen and experienced, and that's all that's necessary.
That's exactly.
And I go out there and do this because I enjoy it, and it's fun. I mean, it's a separate thing. And you know, Brian mentioned I'm an actor. I've actually done a couple of Bigfoot movies, I that was kind of like the same thing you're talking about. I was melding two things that I love together, you know, that my professional and my hobby. So that was a lot of fun. And one of the things that I think a lot of people ask, and there's a big, huge debate about it, you know, when you hear people talk about these things, you know, being able to disappear in the woods, and some people say they're shapeshifters and they're, you know, they interdimensional, all this kind of crazy stuff. And I'm a firm believer that it's a flesh and blood animal or a creature, whatever you want to call it, a hominid. And I just want to ask you, since you're out there, in the areas that you go to, what is the likelihood that a large bipedal hominid could survive?
I'm glad you posed the question that way. You know, when someone sits on the couch and says, oh, we would have seen it by now, where's the body? There's no way it could be out there and not be detected. Well, it's because, you know why? Because you're sitting on a couch, dude. You want to hop in a small plane with me and fly over Alaska? I want to show you something.
Exactly.
And while we fly over Alaska and British Columbia and Washington, I want you to look down and I want you to say, if there was, and we'll go benefit of the doubt here, we'll suspend disbelief. If there was an intelligent being, and see, that's the mistake. It's like, well, it's just a creature. It's just an ape that walks upright. Well, hang on a second. You got to give it some level of intelligence. So let's, for the fun of it and the benefit of the doubt, give it some intelligence. Now we put it down there, and it's the master of that domain. Now we say it's hell-bent for leather, not to be spotted, to be elusive, to be out of sight. Just the same, there's thousands of anecdotal references to the rock throwings and vocalizations and sightings and video and footprints and their samples and on and on. Now, look down at that bush, Mr. Complete Total Cynic Skeptic. Look down at that bush and tell me that something couldn't hide down there, or that even 100 or 500 couldn't hide down there. I know right now there are tribes in the Amazon jungle, the Tagede. I was down there. I survived close to them. If you go in as a group of people to find them, you can't find them. And these are human beings. You can't find them. If you go in as two people, you don't come out alive. You're never seen again. So now we're talking about this creature, and I won't label it, but giving it those benefits, that's if you suspend your disbelief and you give it that kind of benefit of the doubt, the short answer to your question, Mike, is my understanding of the wilderness is, could something exist down there and be undetected with all those sorts of qualifiers? Absolutely. There's a lot of land out there, more land and forested areas and hiding places than people ever realize from their couch.
Well, that's exactly what I tell people. You know, they say all this skeptical stuff, and I'm like, do you ever go out in the woods in the middle of the night by yourself, or just go out in the woods in the middle of the night at all? No. Well, how do you know? It's not going to come to you on your couch.
That's right. That's right. I mean,
exactly.
For example, the fact that there are lots of, I don't know the numbers, so I'm just going to say the word lots, because I know it's lots.
Yes.
But there are lots of convicted criminals that are hidden and escaped and not found again. And a lot of them become, you know, bushmen. They hang, they go out, they pilfer from cottages, they go from, you know, place to place, and they get by because they're wanted for murder or something like that, and we can't find them.
It's so interesting. It's so interesting that you say that, because many times on the show previously, and Michael can attest to this, I've tried to explain people, you know, when I go out there, the state of mind that I try to get into. I try to think of them kind of like you just said, and I've said this many times, like a fugitive trying to avoid detection. You know, if you
exactly.
get that mindset, and you if you get that mindset, then it's a little bit easier to understand what they do and how they do it, and a little bit of why they do it.
And they're doing it in an area that they know every little tiny square inch of, like the
bathroom. That's right. You yourself go out there and survive. You do it yourself. That's your show. And these things, born and raised out there, that's all they've ever known, it would come much easier to them than even it would to you.
Absolutely. Look, I move with great ease from my living room to my bedroom to my kitchen to my hallway, and I don't even think about it. I could probably close my eyes and do it because this is
right.
my domain. Well, that's their domain.
That's exactly right. So
I love the way that you phrase that, Les. That's their living room, their bedroom, their kitchen, their hallway. And we're just visiting when we go.
Well, I mean, the three of us could probably, there are so many angles to this we could talk about an attack. And, you know, so for example, one small one is the constant request to, you know, set all the trail cams up. And how come my deer trail cam never catches or anything like that? Well, you have to think about it another way. Once again, you have to give this phenomenon some intelligence. Now, if you put something, if someone comes in here, and I mean, if someone comes in, I happen to be in my bedroom right now, and if I look across the room, if someone came in here and moved my toiletry bag that I travel with from one shelf to the next, you know what? I'm going to notice it.
That's right. Same thing.
Yeah, you do all these things. How come they don't get caught on a trail cam? Well, they see exactly what you're doing, and maybe they understand, maybe they don't. But either way, maybe they're just extremely leery of it. When they spot one of those things, they avoid them. You know, I don't know. I don't have an answer. That's total conjecture.
It's not hard. I've done it, you know, with my children. You know, just playing hide and seek. It's not hard to disappear into the woods. It's not hard at all. I've done it wearing bright clothes, just covered myself with leaves, and they walked right over me. These things. Like you said, they know when something is out of place. You know, I've been in the woods, and I'm sure you have also, Les, and you as well, Michael. I've been in the woods, and you can tell when another human being enters those woods, either by sound or just the feeling that you get. I've been in the woods completely by myself, and I knew that someone else was in those woods before I ever saw them.
Now, there's nothing stealthy about a human being, unless we really want to be and try to be, but most of the time we're not.
That's right.
Right. So, Les, we've got some. We're getting close to time for you to bolt, and I wanted to get to this before you did. You've got some upcoming Bigfoot, Survivor Man, Bigfoot episodes that you've got kind of. They're in the planning stages, I understand. But you are going to be coming down to the East Texas, Louisiana area for at least a portion of one of those, or.
I'm definitely going to try. You're right. I'm in the planning stage, and, of course, logistics dictate a lot of different things. Here's the good news. The good news is that so long as – when I did those first two shows, I just wanted to scratch the surface show the networks what I was talking about. Show them, look, I can do something with this. I can do this in a way that nobody's doing this, and I can do it in my way. And it worked. So now I'm doing a half a dozen of them. You know, I'll be blunt and honest. If the half a dozen do well, and then I'd love to continue. And at this point, the for lack of a better term, the Bigfoot community, the Bigfoot industry, if you will, has been extremely accommodating. And I have dozens of emails from people just like yourself, Mike, that have been very, very accommodating. I think they get it. They get that I don't make TV shows. I don't do that. I seek truth, and I seek to teach. And I'm a good documentary filmmaker. That's what I do. And I combine those things, and that's the way I'm approaching this subject. And I don't need to put flashy pictures of hairy fangs and flashy sound effects, and I don't need to go in and pretend I've got five scientists all in a circle, you know, dissecting. I don't have to do that. I got to get out to the bush, get out to the bush.
Michael and I talked about the same thing just today, as a matter of fact, how, I would never do a show unless it was 100% legit and believable. And I even told
Michael,
the way Les is doing it is the right way to do it.
Well, and I know that they're going to listen to this, and I want to say for those who have contacted me or have a thought about it that I'm approaching all of this with the utmost of respect and honoring whatever is opened up to me. So let me give you a small example. Someone says, look, you can come into my area. And let's face it, a lot of people are very protective of their research areas. So first of all, I'm going to honor that. I'm going to respect that. If we're not allowed to say where we are, we don't say where we are, and so on and so forth. But let's say, for example, I said, well, I want to put up a whole bunch of trail cams. And someone says, you know, I don't work that way. I think that'll insult the creature. I think that'll ruin my research setup. Then I'm going to say, we aren't going to do it then. Fine. How would you like to go in? And I'm going to go. So that's the way I approach it. For everybody listening, anybody who's thoughtful of this, obviously it's like a bit of a reach out for me. And as I said, someone like Mike has reached out to contact me, and I'm very honored about that. So I can then say, all right, it's not going to be next month. It's not going to be in 6 months. But you know, in 7 months, I'm ready to go or what have you. And then I'm going to, you know, I've got ways that I need to do things to be able to film, and I'm just going to lay it all out there. It's always a matter of openness and honesty. But for me, it's about, I don't know what it's about. It's about seeking. I'm searching this subject matter. I'm not claiming one thing or the other. And I know that my viewers want that from me. They don't want me coming out saying, you know, that's a Bigfoot track and Bigfoot are real. And frankly, I haven't seen one. I'm not one of those people. I'm not lucky enough to say I've seen one. So because of that, I'll remain, you know, skeptical until I see. So, but you already know how intrigued I am because of my experiences.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm doing, where I go, and if Mike is gracious enough to allow me to come into his location, it's on Mike's terms, and that's the way I'm doing this.
Yeah, I mean, you're more than welcome to come here to Mississippi, to my area as well, you know, anytime. I got video, audio, anytime you want to. You know, I'm sure Michael can put us in touch with each other.
Well, that's great. I'll
tell you this, Les. However you need to do what you need to do to make it work for you, I'm on board with it. I'm here to accommodate you so that you have a good show. And go in there and experience whatever happens the way you want to do it. So.
I'm very excited about it. You know, my specialty is what I do as a filmmaker in rough circumstances and remote locations. And of course, I've got, you know, techniques and things I use. You can see it in the show, whether I use a drone or what have you. But when it comes down to the brass tacks, when it comes down to, okay, we're going to try and, you know, attempt some sort of contact, that's another matter. That's when I get very highly specialized. That's the world I live and breathe in. And I'm very excited about it all. It's gonna be a very intriguing time for me, for sure.
Yeah, you know, we've been getting a lot of these, and I noticed on your previous show, and you did the whole tree break thing, and I'm sure not every tree break is Sasquatch, and everybody seems to think it is. And my theory on that is, you know, is it coincidental? Yes. Is it interesting? Yes. Unless I actually see a Sasquatch doing it, I can't say it's a Sasquatch.
Right. Right.
You know.
And that's actually, there was great enthusiasm amongst Sasquatch researchers, and I come with a great deal of temperance. It's a matter of, okay, I get it. That was a big snapping branch, and the wind isn't blowing, and I get it. But you can't just assume it was a Bigfoot either. You
That's
know,
right.
Trees rot.
Right.
They fall apart. I've spent so much time in the woods that I can tell you that when a tree falls in the forest, it does make a sound if I'm there. Because I've watched it, you know. And they fall. They will fall because of rot. But it's you know, a very good tracker friend of mine. We talked about this, and I'll be going out to his location eventually. And he had a full on experience. It's about looking and seeing that, you know, what is not normal here. What's not normal with the sound, the circumstance, the event. You know, what's not normal, and there is a normality to the wilderness, and you can spot the breaks in that normality, and that's you know what we're looking for here.
Right. I mean, awesome. I totally agree. You know, I know we're getting close to the time that you have to depart us. I have someone that I have to bring on. He's a partner of mine and kind of a sponsor of the show. If that's okay with you, of course.
Oh, absolutely. I think we've got about 15 minutes yet.
All right. Jeff, are you good there?
Hello, gentlemen. How are you guys?
Hi, Jeff.
How's everything? Brian, Michael, Wes.
Everything.
How should I say, Mr. Stroud?
Everything's very good. How are you? It was really good to speak with you.
Oh, man, I just I couldn't let the chance get by. I just had to tell you that my whole family loves your show, and there's several little things that you say. I don't know if I could say them on the radio, but it kind of translates into little things we say around the house, and it just it's had a huge impact. It's just wonderful. But the reason I was calling, I was talking to Gene, the other member of the company, and I don't know if you've seen our figures or not, but I would love to send you a set of those, if that's permissible, whatever we get.
No, of course, everything's permissible. I mean, absolutely. I'd be honored to get them. I might even try and find a place to slot them into the show. So maybe I could find one as a mascot. That'd be really wonderful, and I greatly appreciate the gesture.
Well, Les, the images, the promo images that I did for you coming on the show tonight, those are the creature replica figures in the images with you.
That's what I figured when you told me. Yep, I figured that was the case, and they're just terrific.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. We're, you know, a lot of time went into kind of just trying to make sure we get them, you know, correct with accounts and evidence, and I would be honored for you to have a set of those, and I'm just as excited to send them to you.
Well, I'd be honored to receive them. You know, it's funny. I just picked up on something you said about, you know, the different terms and stuff, and it was really great for me, and so humbling to, you know, so many things that have come out of the Survivor Man series. And when I've had mothers say to me, you know what, now because of your show, when my son's hungry, he doesn't tell me he wants some food. He tells me he needs some sustenance. and I thought, that's great, because that was just one of my little, you know, verbal idiosyncrasies that I used to say a lot. You know, and on Survivor Man, and of course you sweat, you die, which is, you know, one of my favorite phrases. And it's really, really humbling when something that I've said through Survivor Man finds its way, into the vernacular of families on a regular basis. And usually it's usually a 12-year-old boy that drives his mom nuts with my language, I think.
Oh, it's great, Brian. Can I tell my story real quick? Take 2 minutes.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead, man.
We were, me and my son, my youngest son is 9, and so we were four-wheeling here this summer, and this is just one of the funny ones, because, you know, we had to stop, because he had to go to the bathroom, so he's over there, and I'm over by the four-wheelers, and he hollers at me. He says, Dad, if you're not peeing, you're not drinking enough. That's what Survivor Man says, and I just mess it out laughing, because it just, everything kind of works in like that. It's just funny.
That's really wonderful. I mean, there's been a number of things that the Survivor Man series has resulted in with families and people, and those little moments are really, really cute. And I've had people send me pictures of their kids dressed up as me for Halloween. When I saw that, I thought, well, you know, I've arrived. That's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
I was going to say it's the same at my house. We sit down as a family and watch your show, and
and enjoy everything that you do. And I have one question that I've always thought about. While you were filming at the previous season's episodes, have you ever been in a situation that you really all of a sudden you start thinking this could get really bad really fast, and find yourself in a situation that kind of freaks you out?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the moral of the story is a good one to pay attention to, because it happened recently. The moral, I'm going to hit with the moral first. The moral is, I got cocky. I got into that mode, you know, we have that phrase now, I got this. And that's the way I was feeling. And I started to make my way down the mountainside in the episode 2 of Norway. And I was in Norway walking down to the fjord in wet snow, freezing rain, flipping down ice, and, you know, coming up to cliffs I couldn't get down. I couldn't go back up. And the potential for me to have gotten hypothermia that night was the greatest I'd ever had in my entire life. And there are things I said on camera that I told my editor not to put in the film. I was really in quite a state, and at times a desperate state. I slid down that whole mountainside on my bum because my legs had started to buckle from exhaustion. And that was it was a dangerous situation, and the only reason I got there was arrogance. You know, maybe not but arrogance, but it was overconfidence. You know, I've been doing this for long enough. I got this. I could do this blindfolded, and I was wrong. I shouldn't have let down my guard.
I can totally relate to that, because a lot of times out in the field, and I'm sure Michael can attest to this too, out in the field, you get so comfortable that you start doing things that you don't even realize you're doing. Yeah. For example, I see eye shine, and before I know it, I'm halfway into the woods going towards it without even realizing I'm doing it. And that could be a potentially dangerous thing if not put in check.
Yeah, I think the act of what we do out there, whether it's this Bigfoot subject matter or survival, is in and of itself risky enough and dangerous enough that if you let down your guard for a moment and get all confident, overconfident about it, you run the risk of getting yourself in some serious trouble.
Right. Well, Les, we got about 8 minutes left of your time on here. I want to take this opportunity to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming on. It's a dream come true for me, and I really do appreciate it. And I would be honored to have you back on in the future.
Absolutely. I would join you anytime for conversation. I mean, I'm going to have lots to talk about, and I expect a lot to happen over the next bunch of months when I get out there filming again. And I'm going to remain the skeptic. I'm going to remain the intrigued individual. I want to represent that person who's going, come on, show me. I suppose until the day I see it.
I mean, that's the only way you can be to get unbiased results.
Yeah.
You have to be skeptical of everything.
Les, I was going to say there's a saying that I always use, and I've been doing this for a long time. When we're in the field, you have to put your skepticals on.
Yeah.
You can't be, you know, all one-sided about it. You have to be skeptical, and any evidence or things that you think that may be evidence, you have to use the scientific method to go back and look at it. You can't just say, "Oh, that's what that is." So,
like we said earlier, you know, I've taken a lot of flack for going down this road. I don't really care. The bottom line is I'm going in as a skeptic, and it's in both directions. If every time I hear a branch snap, it's a Bigfoot.
Right.
I'm going to look like only a fanatic. And
that's right.
And yet if I just turn a blind eye to things that are completely out of place and odd and should be questioned, then I'm playing the skeptic role. Way too with too much tunnel vision,
So it's you're skeptical and open all at the same time. And for those individuals who claim to have seen, well, they've got an advantage, haven't they? They've got a story that they believe in. And, you know, just touching on that, and because I know you've hit all these different topics over the years, but it's just, you know, part of me really questions that fact that there are individuals who claim to have clearly and soberly seen something and describe it and so on as a Bigfoot. And these are individuals who aren't liars. They're credible human beings who have nothing to gain, who are just and sometimes reluctantly telling their story. And sometimes I find that one point alone is enough to go, huh, okay. All right, then. Let's take a look at this.
If I can speak for Michael, you're on the air with two of them right here.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're much farther ahead of me. So in a way, as a filmmaker, it gives me the advantage. I can come in this and say, well, I haven't seen, and I believe you guys and I trust you guys, but I haven't seen. So, you know, let's carry on. Let's do this.
Well, like you said earlier, there's only one way to see them. Let's get out there and do it.
That's not sitting on your couch, that's for sure.
That's right.
Exactly.
Well, Les, I thank you so much for coming on. I hope it's safe to say that I will have you back on in the future.
Absolutely, yeah. No, we'll again for sure.
It's been a dream for me. I mean, it's a major highlight, and I appreciate it so much. And I'm going to have Michael relay my contact information to you as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, it's been my pleasure, gentlemen. I will expect to be on again. I think that'd be wonderful, and I hope to have some reports for you when I do. And not to mention, of course, I'm mentioning it. Also, I've got more Survivor Man shows I'm filming this year. There's a lot of stuff coming on with me. The networks have been terrific. It's going to be a big year, and I've got a lot of good stuff coming out. So I look forward to talking with you all again. And Mike, I know we'll be connected by email soon, and chatting it's going to be great. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you again,
Les.
Thank
you.
Have a great night.
Just take care, and I will talk to you again soon. Good night.
All right. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
How awesome was that, man?
Hey, that was awesome. Is Jeff still on? Jeff, are you still there?
I am, guys, and I want to tell you, you both get full sets of our figures. I mean, this was a dream come true, and I thank you both so much. This was just, I'm almost in tears, man.
I'm telling you. You know, Les Stroud just told Michael and myself that we were further along than he was. I mean, man, that is a compliment, isn't it?
That's huge. That's huge. I'm in tears. Now, Jeff, see, I'm in tears just thinking about having a set of those creature replicas.
Oh, man, all you had to do is ask.
Because I look at those and I go, those are so cool. And, you know, my wife is like, they're toys. And I'm like, no, they're not. They're not
They're
toys.
A representation of what we did.
Jeff,
you better slow down. You gotta remember that you have to make a profit on these to continue. You can't keep giving them away to everybody.
Well, yeah, and the thing I thought was cool, Jeff, is the fact that he said, you know, hey, maybe he can, you know, slide one of them into his show.
That's right.
I know. I about had a heart attack when he said that. I just about fell out of a chair.
That's right.
We try. We try our best.
I
can't say thank you enough, both of you.
I can't say thank you enough to Michael. I mean, damn! I'll tell you what, I'm gonna dance at your wedding, buddy.
Hey, well, brother. I was glad I could do it. I was glad that I was able to get Les to agree to come on the show. Like I said, long before he ever did the first Bigfoot episodes, Survivor Man Bigfoot, I had watched on YouTube the interview that he did with Joe Rogan. and those guys, and he's not, it very is, have you ever seen Bigfoot? They were just joking around, and, you know, in a split second, you know, he answered them and said, yeah. And they went into this whole thing, and for like 45 minutes, they were just, you know, talking about it and going back and forth and everything. And, of course, they were, they were, you know, jokingly ribbing, you know, the other show that's on the air, and you know, suggesting they change the name from Finding Bigfoot to Looking for Bigfoot because they never find him. And
yeah,
it was kind of funny. And and those guys, you know, and it was on that show that he had said, you know, if it's done right, you know, you can go out and the way he does things and the way he goes out by himself. And there's many researchers I've heard that talk about these habituation situations. And the only way that you're going to get any kind of real attainable data or info, you know, is to go by yourself. And like Jane Goodall did with the, you know, and you don't need to carry a camera or a gun. You need to carry a notepad and a pen. And, you know, just, you know, I might be, I don't know about not carrying a gun, but I, you know, the way he does things, I wouldn't be surprised if he, you know, if he goes to the right areas at the right time, and you know, there's no telling what he can get.
I got to touch a little bit on that, the whole gun thing. You guys know I don't carry a gun. I just carry a, you know, nice-sized knife when I go out there. And here's the thing, and having Les on the show is a perfect example of it. Les has been all over the world without a gun. You know what I'm saying? And
right.
I mean, he's been in some places that I wouldn't even go, probably with a gun. And he's come out of it unscathed. You know, I mean, look at the time he was down there in Amazon and the Jaguar was following
him. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and, in Papua New Guinea when the headhunters were around.
One of the most exciting things for me about the show tonight was how much Les was saying the exact same things that I've been saying ever since I started this broadcast. You know, that I was like, wow, you know. It kind of validated to me that I'm on the right track.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's your, you know, there's your proof. You had somebody, you know, Les Stroud, Survivor Man, say the exact same things.
I know it doesn't get any better than that, buddy.
I was just happy that I could, like I said, I heard that from Joe Rogan and everything, and I immediately went and looked for his email address and found it, and I sent him a simple email and explained who I was, what I do, and offered, you know, if you ever want to come down to this neck of the woods, you know, we can certainly put you in some areas that have had a lot of reports and sightings and everything. And I didn't expect anything to come of it. And like the next day, there was an email back from him, and it was, you know, he was just going on and on about how he would really love to do that. And that's been a year and a half, 2 years ago. And we've just kind of stayed in contact and email back and forth. And a couple of months ago, he emailed me and said, hey, is that offer still on the table? And I said, yeah. And he said, great. He said, I'd love to come down and do a show and have you take me out somewhere. And I said, let's do it. And so we were just kind of talking back and forth. And then I started doing, did a couple of shows, a couple of your shows here. And I thought, hey, you know, maybe I can get Les to do the show. So there you go.
Came,
That's how it all came to pass.
You came through for us, in a big way. I mean, me being me, I was nervous. I was Debbie Doubter, you know, because I wasn't in contact with them directly myself, and I'm like, okay, is this for real? Is this going to happen? Is, you know, what's going on? And dude, you did it, man. I can only say thanks.
You're welcome, man.
I owe you. I mean, you came through in a big way.
Now, laughingly, I'll tell you, it's one of the reasons why a buddy of mine, he calls me Magic Mike, and I'm like, and that's not in a reference to the movie, thank God. Somebody says, hey, can we do this or can we do that? And I'm like, yeah, we can do that. And they're like, well, how are you going to do that? And I'm like, well, just trust me. And the next thing you know, it's done. And they're like, how did you do that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like I've gotten so many messages and whatnot from a lot of people regarding Trapper and Jeff and the whole Mountain Monsters crew. And they're like, how the hell did you get them? I'm like, you just do it. You just got to do it. You know, you got to commit to it and do it. You know, that step alone, that showing them that confidence alone is beneficial.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you're not going to get an answer if you never ask.
That's right, just like you're never going to find Sasquatch if you don't go.
Exactly.
Well, here's what we're going to do.
If you don't ask...
For the rest of the show, we're gonna take calls. We're gonna all be sitting around chit chatting, shooting the bull, and everything. But what I want to do first, you know, today is 9/11, and in remembrance of all those who we lost on 9/11, and all those that we've lost since 9/11, from all the battles taking place afterwards. What I want to do is. I want to take a moment of silence if we can. Are you guys cool with that?
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, we're going to take a moment of silence in honor of everyone lost during 9/11 and as a result of 9/11. We'll be right back, guys. Okay, we are back. Thank you guys for sticking with us. I appreciate it. Let me get Jeff on. All right, guys, here's what I want to talk about. You guys know that I'm all about branching out. I'm all about letting you guys take part of this. You know, I know a lot of you have your own teams. I don't want to take anything away from your teams. I just want to include everyone. And basically what I'm trying to do is create a network of all of us so we can share our ideas, we can share our beliefs, we can share our findings. I think two heads are better than one, and I think one of the best ways to get out there and get this acknowledged, if you will, is by getting as many people involved as possible. So the recent development, if you will, is we're going to have a team based out of Louisiana, and we're going to be calling it Cajun Cryptids. It's going to be run by Donnie. I can't pronounce his last name to save my life, but he's on the air with us, and we're going to bring him on shortly. Let me get him. Hey, Donnie. Donnie, are you there?
Yeah.
Hey, man. Hey, I just I don't know if you were able to hear or not, but I just got finished speaking about the development of the Cajun Cryptid division of Onyx Knights Paranormal. Now, you've been out this week talking to some different researchers and people, getting them on board, correct?
Yeah, I sure have.
And, you know, we have... I can say this on air, confirmed, Mike Woolley is going to be involved with this particular division.
That's great. That's wonderful.
And we look forward. There's a couple other people that are going to be involved. We're still working on the actual core team at this point in time, but it's going to be awesome. You know, I'm originally from Louisiana. It just makes sense to go there and have a team down there doing what we do. You know, we're going to keep the same core team, the Onyx Knights Paranormal Cryptids. That's going to be myself here in Mississippi, and it's going to also be Michael and Johnny Holmes over there in the Texas Arkansas area. But we're going to step out a little bit on a limb and develop the Cajun Cryptid division as well.
Yeah, I mean, everything's going good so far. Of course, I had my meeting with a few people yesterday. That went extremely well, actually a lot better than what I thought it was. We've got a ton of area just to go over. You know, I want to try to get out there a lot more when the weather cools off a little bit.
All right.
It's just so freaking hot out there right now.
Down in
the swamps and whatnot.
I'm looking forward to this.
Especially if we're going to go out at night.
I'm looking forward to this cool front coming through in the next couple of days. I'm definitely looking forward to that. And guys, like I said, this new division is just starting out. I'm going to be working on, you know, I want to focus mostly on tonight's show with Les this week. But in the near future, I'm going to be working on it a lot more, building the Facebook group page. We're going to be using one of you guys' action figures as a logo. We're going to be using the Rougarou.
Absolutely, I think that's awesome.
Yeah, so we're going to.
Yes.
I mean, you guys know me, man. I'm all about helping everyone out and trying to tie everyone in together in whatever way I can.
Well, you seem to be doing a pretty good job.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, what you're developing.
I'm
sorry.
I mean, yeah, I want to have a team. I hope one day to have a team over in, say, Washington State, say, Oregon, hell, even British Columbia. You know, if I can find the right people that are committed, devoted, and serious, then yeah, you know, I'm all for it. Maybe even Florida. You know, getting a division down there too, because you know I figure what the bigger the net we cast, the better our chances are of getting some kind of good evidence, if you will. Because you know the whole Bigfoot phenomenon, the whole Sasquatch phenomenon. It's taken off, you know. It's taken off recently, similar to what it was back in the 50s and 60s, when everything was all, you know, so big. And it kind of had to die down, and then now it just, you know, everybody seems interested in it, and it's gotten a lot of circulation, and it's being taken a little bit more seriously.
They were talking about, you know, Finding Bigfoot show. I don't disparage those guys because it is, and because I do work in film and everything, that I understand that it's pure entertainment. And Autumn Williams once told me, because she used to have a show called Mysterious Encounters, and it was focused on the Bigfoot Sasquatch phenomenon, and it was like on Outdoor Life Network or something, and she was there for a couple of seasons, and she told me, you know, directly, she said, you know, they had a set schedule to film each episode, and it was usually they had a week, and that meant getting to the location, interviewing all their witnesses, setting up camp, she goes, you wound up with maybe a day or a day and a half of actual trying to do some research. She goes, if you think that they actually accomplished anything during that, you were sadly mistaken. And
that's
I
right.
think it's kind of the same way that Finding Bigfoot is set up. You know, they have a limited amount of time that they can be in an area. They have to do what they can, and then of course, you know, the producers are going to edit it to draw the most excitement for each episode, so they can draw that audience in. Because the bottom line for them is ratings. How many people are watching our show?
Here's the thing, Michael. You and I both know from experience, and Donnie, I'm sure you might as well. You can't just take a dart, throw it at a map, go there, and have a Bigfoot encounter. You can't. It will not happen in one night. It won't. You know, you have to continuously frequent. I mean, hell, I've been going back here to my earth for 7 years, and just recently got some what I consider activity, you know. I mean,
right.
I've gotten activity in the past, but I'm talking about as far as video and real good audio. That's just recent. And Michael, hell, you're the person that cleaned up my audio for me.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, the thing of it is that I tell people, you know, I have people that I've known all my life, you know, and they find out I do that, you know, and you know, sometimes if it's out in public, they won't say much. But they'll always, invariably, every time they'll pull me to the side, they'll go, man, the next time you go, I want to go. I want to go see a Bigfoot. I want to go. Yeah. And I try to explain to them, as long as I've been doing this, and we go to some of the same areas over and over and over and over and over again, I said 9 times out of 10, you're not going to have anything happen.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee any time you go in the woods.
Yeah, I mean, you'll hear something, and you'll get a thrill out of it. Maybe it's a Sasquatch, maybe it's not, but it's still exciting. And, you know, I want to touch on that when Les was on the show as well. You know, for me, whether I go out there and get Sasquatch activity or not, I'm still enjoying myself. It's still gorgeous out there.
Oh,
You know, especially, like, with the bright moonlight, albeit the moonlight does kind of drown out your headlamp, so you're not going to be able to see as far into the woods. But it's still gorgeous, man. It's so liberating being out there. And, you know, we're going to get together, and we're going to go out next month in the beginning of October to the Falk area. And there's going to be a bright moon when we're out there, so that's going to be awesome. I've already checked the calendar, and yeah. Jeff, man, dude, I would love to get you out there.
You know, you mentioned that to me here a couple weeks ago, and I've always wanted to go to Falk. I mean, even if it's just to say I've been there. you know what? It wouldn't take much for me to say I'm in.
Yeah, if you could afford it, dude. I'd love Donnie. I know you're going to try to come up, right?
Yeah, I am actually. I've already made preparations and moved schedules around, and all I got to do is put my gear in the Jeep.
Right, right. Cool. We're getting a lot of echo with you, Donnie. It sounds kind of like you're a robot.
I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. You know. Seriously, Jeff, man, if you can afford it, if you can get down, dude, I would love to have you there.
Oh, okay, I'm in. Just send me the when and where to be, and I'm going to tell you that I'm coming because I want to. I mean, it's just there's no better time.
Right. I was going to say, Jeff, when you get into Falk, there's a place there that you're going to love called Monster Mart. And
I think
I've
seen a picture of it.
Yeah, it is. Now, years ago, several years ago, my first trip into the Falk area, the Monster Mart was the same as it had been for 50 years. It's just a little, you know, a cinder block building, gas station / convenience store type place. And nothing really spectacular about it, except in the corner they had a little glass case that had a bunch of the stuff from the Legend of Boggy Creek. In the most recent years, they have taken one whole end of the building and turned it into a complete museum, and you can, I mean, it's just really amazing. And the sign that they have across the top of the building, you know, it really
wow.
is an amazing place, because, I mean, the entire top of the building looks like a log with a Bigfoot that's about 20 foot tall just leaning over the top of it.
If you've seen Brian Impey's post when they did the interviews for Skookum or Johnny Holmes, that's where they did
yeah.
those interviews at.
Yeah, that's where they did the interviews at, yeah.
Well, that's awesome. I got to visit there.
Oh, yeah. And it's, you know, I don't know about talking to locals or anything like that, because they're still pretty tight-lipped. I tell you, Jeff, if you get a chance to read the book, The Beast of Boggy Creek by Lyle Blackburn.
I got it. I got the...
You have that copy?
I did. Lyle gave me a copy at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference.
Awesome. Awesome. It is a... I think it's probably the most seminal...
I've got to get myself a copy of that. Michael and I spoke about that earlier.
It's probably one of the most well-written accounts. I mean, it goes, you've read it, you've gone through it, and I think it's the most accurate. But it took Lyle, I think he told me it was like 5 years of driving from Dallas to Falk, Arkansas, you know, like every weekend or every other weekend, to get these people to open up and get
wow.
used to him and get to talk to him. And I mean, it took him a long time. And I think they're still that way to outsiders. So, but, yeah, you should definitely come down and experience it for yourself. It's a beautiful...
I want to so bad.
Well, we're, like
so
I said, weekend...
Is that a yes?
Yeah, heck yeah, that's a yes.
All right, we're going to be down there the 1st of October, from the 1st of October to the 5th.
You know, I might start having flashbacks, because the original Beast of Boggy Creek movie is what scarred me when I was a child. So if I find myself down there, I might revert back to my fearful state.
Oh, man. Come on now. We don't want to hear about your Vietnam flashbacks.
Oh, no. The legend of Boggy Creek is, I think, I doubt very seriously you would find a researcher out there that doesn't point to that film being one of the reasons they got into research.
I believe that.
You know, Mike and I spoke about this today, and I told him, I was like, man, I wish there was some way for them to clean up that movie. I mean, I hate to say remake it, but, you know, some way to make it much clearer and much more HD, and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but it's...
Oh, yeah.
That's what makes it what it is, though, that little fuzziness and that, you know, sophomoric type commentary. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. That's one of the things, I don't know if I would want it messed with or not. I know what you're saying. Didn't they release a cleaned-up copy a little bit? Didn't Lyle have one of those?
I don't know.
I have a DVD copy of it. And you guys are going to think this is kind of hokey, but the entire time we've been on, actually, The Legend of Boggy Creek is playing on my television right now. I just have it muted.
Guys, we have
cool.
another caller. We have another caller calling in. Let me, Donnie, thank you for calling in, man. I'm going to go ahead and talk to you soon.
Yeah, that's perfect. I'm probably going to call you back later tonight off air.
Yeah, that sounds great to me, buddy.
All right.
Thanks for calling in, Donnie.
No problem.
Well, they hung up.
Okay.
That was odd. Get that a lot. It was a 318 area code. I thought it might have been Debbie. But, yeah, man, you know, we're going to have a blast down there, Jeff. I mean, like you said, just
awesome.
Going to Falk alone, you know, that's kind of a bucket
yeah.
list for any researcher.
absolutely.
Definitely. It's a gotta do, you know, and then I just needed a little bit of prod, and you provided that, so thank you.
Yeah, we'll get you out there. Now, guys, Jeff and I talk to each other pretty regularly, and we mess with each other a lot. So when I say this, Jeff knows, we'll get you out there and show you how it's done, Jeff.
Excellent.
Make a man out of you.
Oh, no.
We'll try not to talk about your purdy mouth too much.
Oh, squeal, see, now man. You crossed the line. You
squeal.
You're gonna scare him off.
Jeff and I rag each other constantly, like brothers, all the time. I mean, we pick on each other and mess with each other all the time. So he knows it's all in
Michael.
Love.
Michael, he just thinks that I'm actually serious.
Oh, Lord.
Whatever.
Oh.
Whatever. I tell you what, man, you know, things are going really, really great. You know, I can't believe how far we've come in such a short amount of time. You know, I was talking to you last night. You know, I just started this broadcast in March. You know, and help me. And tonight, Les Stroud was on. You know, I mean, man, that's like, it's amazing. You know, I'm constantly surprised at how far we've come in such a short period of time. And you know, I believe me, I do not take full credit for it myself. It's the people that I surround myself with, you guys. You know, my friends, my family. You know, and I appreciate each and every person that's involved in it.
Oh, I think you're silly, Brian. I am just being around you and talking, you know, meeting the people that you know and having conversations with them. That's been huge for us. I mean, holy cow! And you're right. We've been in like just a little over a year. We went from a couple years of talking about it, just having the same interest. I'm talking about me and Gene. To all of a sudden now, we're getting ready to have these, you know, these wonderful. It's almost like a tool of the trade. And I'm talking to Les Stroud on the radio now. What's going on? I mean, it's great.
It's
you know
the
what?
Connections. Everybody's got these connections, man.
Yeah, you know, Jeff sits here and he talks me up and praises me, and I'm like, dude, you own your own toy company. You're making Sasquatch action figures, and you're, you know, I'm just a guy talking and, you know, going out in the woods.
Brian, that kind of gives you the idea of what I was talking about with you earlier today about, you know, people find out that I'm an actor and that I do films and I do TV and commercials, different things, and you know, and I'm not a star by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, I get people that treat me differently, and it's kind of surreal. At times, and it's like, well, look, I'm still the same guy I was, you know,
exactly.
20 years ago. I just do something different for a living. I mean, that's my job, and I treat it as such, and it just happens to be, and it's not all that it's cracked up to be. There's a lot of pitfalls, and there's a lot of stuff that goes on, and you know, somebody said something about, oh, it must be an easy life, and I'm like, I wish you'd have been on set with us in the swamps in June.
I can imagine.
Yeah, filming for 16 hours a day. I mean, you know, eight hours into it, and we're only halfway done. You know, most people have an 8-hour day; they go home. We're taking lunch.
I think what means the most to me, and what I take away the most from all this, and appreciate the most, is the fact that I don't know how to put this correctly. I'm being accepted for who I am, you know, for just being myself, and that means so much to me. Having that acceptance for just doing what I love to do, being myself, talking about what I love to talk about, and I, the appreciation for that is great, and you know, that above anything else is most important to me, and the whole family atmosphere that comes along with that.
Yeah, and I'm like you, Brian. I think it's cool that Jeff has a toy company and makes Bigfoot action figures. I mean,
yeah,
that's
all
cool.
Jeff, man, you need to.
That's freaking cool.
Think a little bit higher of yourself, man. Hell, dude.
Yeah.
You know that if it wasn't for Gene St. Gene, there wouldn't be a toy company. I mean, you can't help but. I mean, it's not hard because Gene creates the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life. And all I got to do is say, hey, look what I got. And everybody's like, you're the greatest. You know,
yeah,
but
see,
not,
you're the genius that approached Gene on it and pushed him to that next step to actually commit to it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, our combined interest in the subject matter. I mean that was going on, you know, before we actually said, all right, let's turn this into something positive. You know, I mean, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
Guys, we got a caller. I'm going to go ahead and take. Hello, this is Onyx. You're on the air. Hello, caller.
Hello?
Hello, hello. You're on the air.
Oh,
hello.
Well, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear us?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I wasn't planning on talking. I just was going to listen, but hi, Brian.
Hi, who's this?
It's Beth Patterson. I was just
hi,
calling to listen to the show. I couldn't get you on the computer tonight, so I had to call in to listen to the show. So sorry
right,
about
right.
that. I wasn't. How's it going? I just now
it,
got
it,
on.
Oh, it was going great. Les could only be with us for a short period of time. He had some other legal issues he had to handle, but it was great. Right now we're just, you know, it's just me and the guys, and we're just talking and you know.
Okay, hi guys. Who else
are
there?
You, it's me. It's myself, Michael Hall, and Jeff Byers from Creature Replica.
Oh, okay. Well,
hello.
Nice to meet you guys. Hi.
Nice to meet you.
Beth is I don't know if you guys know Beth. She's a friend of Mike Woolley's. A great lady. She's up there in Tennessee. And,
thank you.
You know, she recently had an incident where she had to be hospitalized. I don't know how much you want to talk about that, Beth. I just hope that you're feeling okay tonight.
I am. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling so much better. I had a heart attack and had to have a stent, a couple stents put in, and because I had a blockage. But I feel a lot better. I feel a lot better. I just a little bit sore from the surgery and all that. But other than that, I'm good. I'm great.
Good.
Well, that's great to hear. That's great to hear, Beth. Thank you for calling in. I'll go ahead and put you back in the queue so you can continue
okay.
listening.
All righty. I think Mike's in the queue, actually. I think.
Well, you know, I thought that might have been him. I keep getting a number call in at 318, but every time I go to click it over, it hangs up. So if you can get in touch with him, tell him to call back in.
Okay, I will. Bye, guys. I'll be listening.
Good night. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay, good night.
Yeah, I thought that was either Mike. In fact, there he is now. Let me get him on. Hello, this is Brian. You're on the air.
Hey, Brian. What's going on, my friend?
Hey, how you doing, Uncle Mike? What's up?
Hey. Oh, man, I just listened in. Thought I'd check you out, see what's going on tonight.
What'd you think about it?
Well, I'm just getting in. I'm getting in on tail end, man. You have Les Stroud on tonight?
Yeah, yeah. He couldn't stay on long. He had some prior engagements that he had to take care of. But I'll send you the recording of it. It was great. It was great. Now, you know, we're talking about the Cajun Cryptic group that we're going to be making, that you're going to be involved with, and talking about our trip in October on the 1st over to Fowl. In fact, you told me that you were going to try to get up with us that first day and us all get together.
Yeah,
is that correct?
Yeah, I'm going to hang out with y'all and let y'all buy me lunch that day.
That sounds good.
I hear you. How's everything going?
going good. Just kind of taking it easy, you know. Everything's going to be all right.
I'm glad you called in. Mike had an accident also the other day. His motorcycle fell over on his leg, banged him up pretty good. And luckily, it was just bruised, correct, Mike?
Yeah, just a pretty bad bruise. But, you know, I'll be okay. It's, you know, no broke bones or nothing.
Well, while I got you on, let's talk Skookum. I saw a post that you guys watched it on the big screen, and there's some audio adjustments that have to be made.
Right. We watched it yesterday morning from start to finish. You know, it looked pretty good. There's just a little, you know, fine-tuning on some audio and some still shots they're going to work on a little bit. But, yeah, it's they're just tweaking it right now. And I think Debbie's got to go over to take it over to Dallas, and they're going to make some adjustments. And I feel like, you know, all right, when she gets back, she'll probably start getting the DVDs ready.
Okay, so what we're saying is the director's cut that was supposed to be released last Saturday is now going to go through some more changes, and then it's going to be released, right?
Right. It's just only going to be a few days late. I mean, we had to find a place that we wanted to find a big screen to look at. You know, you really, when you're, you know, looking at something like this, you need a big screen, you know, look at it. And so she found one over in Bossier Library. They let us use their facilities. And we got over there yesterday morning and give it a pretty good going over with fine-tooth comb and talked about what, you know, we thought might need or something like that. But it's just mainly some audio adjustments, you know, a little lighting, but, you know, it's not really a big deal. I think it'll be, you know, out in a few days.
Okay, let's talk about the chances of a sequel. I know I bring that up a lot, but from me talking to you, you seem pretty definitive that there's going to be a sequel.
Well, I've seen about 70 pages of script wrote, you know, and it's in line, you know, for a sequel, depending on how Skookum does, you know, if it warrants the sequel, I feel like it will. We're going to have a sequel, you know, and Debbie's got you in there and playing the Bigfoot.
Yeah,
I'm
anxious to see the suit that I'm going to be
in. Oh, man, I'll tell you what else. I've seen some of your script, man. Did you know you're going to have a love scene with another female Bigfoot in there?
Hey, are you serious right now?
Yeah, man.
All right, as long as I'm the male Sasquatch. Oh, I gotta ask: is there gonna be a guy playing the female, or is it gonna be a girl playing the?
Yeah, it's old lady about 85.
Because that would be kind of awkward. Oh, cool. Yeah.
It's old lady about 85 years old.
Well, hey, at least I don't have to worry about getting seduced by my co-star.
No, man, I'm just ragtagging. You know I got to do that. I told you I'm going to bust your chops every chance I get.
I figured you were. I was just playing along. guys, do we not have an awesome group? I mean, everybody in our group is just awesome, man. We all get along and crack up, just have a great time. You know, I don't think I could have found a better group of people to bring together.
Well, Brian, you know, that's what it's all about, man. I mean, you know, you got to laugh and joke, have a good time, no matter what you're doing, you know. And have fun. Have as much fun as you can, no matter what you do in life. Just, you know, try to have as much fun as you can, you know.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. We're all looking forward to the Skookum movie. The first, and I'm looking forward to the first and the second one for different reasons. But yeah, man, I really, really hope it takes off. for me, it'll be a dream come true to be able to be in a suit and play a Sasquatch. You know, that'll be just awesome. I've always been a big monster fanatic, and I dress up every Halloween. So to be able to do this and, you know, and have it on film is just it's a dream come true for me.
Well, there will be another deal, but there will be some shooting in that movie. I forgot to tell you, you will be get hit a couple times, you know, by gun blasts. They're using rubber bullets, so they say I don't think they hurt that bad. You know, I don't know. You probably
now
get
see
hit four
now.
Or five times.
Now I think you're bullshitting me again.
Hey, I can put it to you this way. Don't let that suggestion leak out on the set on the day that you're filming, because if a director thinks he can get away with it, your butt's getting shot with rubber bullets.
The hell it is.
Well, I'll tell you what, it'd be more live action, you know. You would look like a Sasquatch running in. You would look like a real Sasquatch running in. You get hit with rubber bullets.
You sound like you sound like Turtle Man. Live action.
Live action.
I'm just ragtagging. Well, that's the last one for tonight, man.
I got you. I completely understand.
But now I tell you, Mike, you were there when we were filming, and I know you were there. I don't know if you were there at the bar.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember if you stayed for the whole thing or not.
Yeah, that night. Is this Mike?
Yeah.
Okay, buddy. Okay. Yeah. I stayed there. Y'all took a beating that night, man. I looked at that yesterday. You had a real good scene. Y'all's scene come out real good in the bar. Matter of fact, you had several good scenes. You was in there quite a bit. You did some real good. You sold those punches real good. I know he was hitting y'all pretty good, you know, but y'all sold it pretty good.
I look forward to being in a movie with Michael Hall.
Yeah, we'll do something. I mean, I was going to tell Mike, you know, after 12 hours of getting your butt whooped in a movie scene, I don't care if it's real or not, I couldn't hardly walk the next day. I was so sore. that was that fight scene, and I loved working with Paul Logan and Diana Renee and Randall Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
That was and Diana, she was a trooper. I mean, because mm-hmm. When we pinned her, we had to grab her. I had to grab her from behind, grab her arms, mm-hmm. and hold her in that bar stool. And I kept trying to not. I was like, I don't want to hurt you. I don't want to. You know, she was like, no, go for it. Just grab. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And so I really clamped down on her arms, pulled her back. And she was like, she was right there. You know, and it was a lot of fun. And it was fun being on that on that film and when we shot the Jeep scene and the stuff at the woods, and it was a lot of fun. It was long hours, but when you see the finished product, when you see it on the screen and everything, that's when you get your payoff as an actor. When you see the finished product and you see it and it looks good, I'm excited to finally get to see it. And
I saw it yesterday. I watched it from the first to the end, and all your scenes come out look great. Your bar scene,
well, thank you.
Your bar scene come out good. The encounter in the Jeep, where it jumped up on the back, that come out good. You shined in there. You did good.
I appreciate that, Mike. That means a lot coming from you, buddy. When I do my work, just like Jeff, I know when you do your work with these creating these creatures, I mean, you want to put forth your best effort. and I give it everything I got. You know, I mean, that's what I'm. That's why I'm there. You know, that's what I'm getting paid to do. So, it's my job. So, I appreciate I appreciate the compliment very much. It means a lot.
Yeah, you did. You look good, my friend. You did well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike, for calling in. I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, y'all have a good night, everybody, and enjoy talking to all y'all.
Yeah.
I'll be
forward to seeing you in Falk.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll be in Falk. I think that's what October 24th, 25th. And
was that the Boggy Creek Festival?
Yeah, Boggy Creek Festival. I think it's a little later this year, isn't it?
Yeah,
we're going to be getting together on the 1st, though, of October. That's when we're going to be getting together and go do our expedition.
Right. Well, I'll see y'all then, check everything, you know.
All right, Uncle Mike, I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, buddy, y'all have a good one.
All right, take care.
See ya.
Yeah, Mike he's such a great person. We've talked so much. He's kind of become like an uncle. And Jackie is such a sweet lady as well. We got another caller. I'm going to bring them on right now. Jeff, you still with us?
I am.
I thought you might have fallen asleep.
He's hanging in there, man.
I think Jeff is still in awe over, you know, the whole Les Stroud thing. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Oh. I really wasn't trying to get on the air. I was just listening.
Okay. Who are we speaking to?
Gary Wiggins. I'm a friend
Gary.
Of Mike's.
Right.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey.
I know exactly who you are. Thank you for calling in. I appreciate it. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, I'm driving. Coming back in town, and I just in the last 10-20 minutes got on the radio listening to the show. I missed the first part of it, but I heard
right.
Mike, you know. Yeah.
And guys, I apologize, Michael and Michael and myself. We apologize that we couldn't have Les on for longer, but you know that's just the way it goes. He'll definitely be back on. He'll definitely be back on in the future. And we look forward to continuing the conversation and getting even more in depth.
Oh yeah, I wanted to get like I said, I talked to him a little bit about it when he was on the air with us. Coming down to Texas and Louisiana, and doing his episodes and we've been kind of emailing back and forth and trying to figure out everything. And of course he was saying, he's got, he wants to do everything the right way. So we've been kind of discussing that and locations and different things. And I'm excited about it, my only concern, and I've voiced it with Les, is, the fact that I am a professional actor and I have done, Skookum. And I've got Something in the Woods as the other film so I've done two Bigfoot movies I don't want there to be any, I don't want there to be any kind of blowback on Les if someone, were to come out and say, well, that guy's a professional actor. He's done Bigfoot movies. Of course, Les is going to, we're in the discussion phases of how much I'm actually going to participate in the filming of the show as compared to just helping him get it set up, with a location and introductions and things like that. So, I want him to have a good show, and I don't want it to have any negative connotations from outside entities. So,
Well, you know what? Regardless of you're an actor or not, man, you know, this is what you love to do. This is what you do. You know, every researcher has to have a day job.
Well, yeah. But, you know, the fact that I'm in the entertainment industry as a profession could, you know, I don't want that to be. I would love to be just more above board than normal with it because of that. Because I don't want it to come back on less.
Yeah, it's not like you're trying to pass off fake imagery like someone else that was involved with this. You know, you're not trying to do that stupid crap.
No. I wouldn't. I don't have any imagery really to pass off. I wish I did, but no. No, I mean, I sit back and think about those things. If somebody says, well, it's the same thing with, I'll give you an example. Someone told me one time they were talking about going on research trips, and somebody said, I'm going to bring a 12-pack of beer with me. And I was like,
No, you're not.
There would have been a time I probably would have said, yeah, sure, bring it, you know, and that would have been cool. But then it just opens the door for someone else to come back. If you were to be out there drinking, even if you just had one
beer. Yeah, they'll try to say, oh, you were drunk, so you don't know what the hell you saw or heard. Yeah.
Right.
You know, here's the thing, though.
It taints everything.
People are going to talk regardless, man. You know, I mean, most people in general think that what we do is crazy already. So, you know what? The hell with it. You know, do what you love to do. As long as you're being true to yourself and honest with yourself and what you love to do, then the hell with what anyone else says or thinks.
Right. I'm not thinking of it for myself so much as I am for Les. He's trying to make a show that's like you said, honest and truthful, to the extent of all of his shows, you know,
I think he can handle all that, you know, I mean, he wouldn't have got into this if he couldn't handle all that. I mean, he said himself on tonight's show that he referred to the flack that he got, and he didn't go into detail, you know, but I'm sure it was having to do with who he was involved with previously. So I'm sure he's got thick enough skin that he can deal with all that.
Well, and I would say, I know that his is a reality show, but he is an entertainer. He puts out a show that people watch. So he's kind of he's a celebrity. And in this industry, whether you're doing what he does or if you're making movies or commercials or TV shows or whatever, you have to have thick skin. Because you live in a world of rejection, basically. For every film I have done, I've been totally dissed for, 100 others.
Well, next week I'm going to have Tim Sermons and Bob Garrett on. Tim is a friend of mine. I've known Tim for, at least 6-7 years. He actually came and did an investigation on one of my very first reports from this area. And, he and I are going to be doing some work together in the future, so he's going to come on. And then the week following that, I'm going to have my friend Michael Hawk on. Those that don't know Michael Hawk, he had the show Man, Woman, Wild, Lost Survivors. Good guy. I did some work for him for Christmas. I made an action figure of him for his wife as a Christmas present. That's going to be an interesting show because Michael is he don't pull punches at all. You know, and I'm not saying that anyone else does, but he stands firm with what he believes, and there's probably going to be a lot of militaristic talk and survival talk as well. So that's going to be a great show I got lined up as well.
Yeah, sounds like it.
And what I'm, you know, what I'm trying to do is you know, like with Les, is I'm trying to get it out there to people. What you, Michael, and I already know that it's very easy for something to survive and exist out there in the woods. It's very easy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in reality, all it needs is a cover, you know, a nice place to bed down in the daytime hours, plenty of water. And if there's any kind of animal or vegetation that's edible in the area, that's it.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, that's basically it, you know.
I mean, there's places in my area, and you know, me and Sean Osteen, we really examined my area last week. Even looked at as far as topography, and there's areas, places in my area where I could go. You know, if the shit hit the fan, I know I could go and hide and survive easily, and no one ever find me.
Oh yeah, and I've had people say, oh, the you know, especially when they're talking about that, take the Pacific Northwest out of the equation and just talk about in the East Texas, Louisiana area. I've had people, oh, that's just, you know, the South has been so developed and there's just so many towns and so many that, I mean, I said,
whatever.
I live in the city of Ennis. I am literally 30 minutes drive from downtown Dallas, and I can take you another 30 minutes south of here and put you in an area that is so remote, you'll think you're on Mars. There is nobody around for miles.
I live in the middle of BFE, and let me tell you something. The closest big city in either direction is a two-hour drive. You know, drive through, you know, start down South Mississippi or even up, you know, Tennessee or whatever, and drive through Mississippi, and you'll be like, there ain't shit here. Until you get to Tupelo or Jackson, yeah, the whole middle of Mississippi is pretty much nothing but woods.
Right.
And, you know, Sean Osteen, we were looking at that topography, and he's like, he couldn't believe how many hills and ravines and big hills and ravines there was here in my area. And
it's the same here.
Yeah, yeah. It surprised even me because I knew what it was like, you know, from being on foot out there. But as far as like seeing it, you know, seeing it on a map, all the deep ravines and all the, oh man, I was like, damn, even I didn't know there was that much back there.
Right. Now I'm going to ask Jeff a question. I don't know where Jeff lives.
Little bit south of dead center in Illinois. It's not quite southern Illinois, but don't hold it against me that I hold in Illinois or that I live in Illinois, because I know everything that goes along with this state, which is completely messed up. But there's a lot of territory you wouldn't think is here, you know, in this state, as far as trees and hollers, and we just stare on our four-wheelers for hours.
Oh, yeah, there's
right.
A lot of Sasquatch activity up that way.
And I was going to ask and point out some, if nobody, I don't know if you have, Brian, or if Jeff, if you've ever been into the eastern portion of Oklahoma. You know, when you say Oklahoma, most people think of, you know, flat open prairies and plains,
right,
and things
right.
like that. You know, but in the far eastern edge of Oklahoma is mountains.
Oh yeah.
And when I say mountains,
the closest I've been is Fort Smith, Arkansas, which is right there on the Arkansas Oklahoma border.
Right.
And yeah, I mean there was mountain. Yeah, I know exactly. I mean it was the most boringest town I've ever been in, but Yeah, it was nice country.
Yeah, and that's the thing. But see, the thing that it is that people talk about it. Of course, these are not the Rocky Mountains. That's a whole different, you know, that's a whole different world. But it's the same, you know. And I think people have this same connotation with Texas. They think that the entire state of Texas is a, you know, wide open prairies and plains or desert and things of that nature. And I actually had those questions posed to me when I was in the military going through boot camp. They found out I was from Texas, and that was the question. So, what's it like living in the desert? And I'm like, what? You know, or how many head of cattle do I have? And, you know, how many oil wells does my family own? You know, it was just the stupidest questions. But, I mean, I think the connotation that a lot of the rest of the country have about particular states and areas is that, it, you know, they see it on TV, and that's what they have in their head. I was really shocked when I traveled up into the Kiamichi Mountains and the Winding Stair Mountains and over into the Wachitas and stuff of Oklahoma and Arkansas. It's amazing. Now, and there's a lot of activity, especially in the southeast and northeast corners of, and running up the state line there between Arkansas and Oklahoma. There's places like we were talking about that Les pointed out. There's places there that you could hide for years and nobody ever knew right. You were there. And I'm talking about a human being. Just imagine if you were a hominid, and that's your main focus in life is to be undetected and stay...
Survive.
You know, and just survive. There's ample places. There's plenty of places.
Well, you know,
and
it's like you and I were speaking... You know, people, they go out into the woods and they think just because there's not a Sasquatch where they are at that particular given time, that doesn't, you know, they instantly think, oh, Sasquatch is not real. That's the same as if you were to go in the ocean and try to catch one particular type of fish in the middle of the ocean. You know, just because you don't catch that fish, that doesn't mean that fish doesn't exist. It just means that it's not there at the one particular point in time when you're there. That's all it means. You know,
right.
Sasquatch, you can't expect a Sasquatch to be where you're going to be, you know?
Right, and I've always said this, too. The absence of evidence is not the evidence of absence. You know, just because you don't have that proof in front of you right then doesn't mean that it's not out there.
That's right. We got a caller. I want to bring on Mike, if that's okay. We got about 12 minutes left, so I got to get him on before we go off there. Hello, you're on the air. Hello? Hey, is this Donnie? Yeah, I think that's Donnie. I think he's just calling in to listen.
You know, I, one of the other points, I read this statistic one time, from Northern California to Southern Alaska. And this is I think you can look this up. It's an FAA statistic. There's something like 100 and some odd airplanes that have crashed and are missing,
mm-hmm.
and that they have never found. Now we're talking about big metal objects that are staying. Once it crashes, it's stationary. It's not going to move anywhere else.
Well, if you want to go even further than that, the whole D.B. Cooper case, you know?
Yeah.
He was in a parachute. He had a parachute, and you know, look how much difficulty they're having finding any of that. You know, I believe they found part of the parachute. I'm not sure. But,
they found,
you know,
some money.
That's still a mystery.
Yeah, whatever happened, you know, I mean... So if you have something that's, say, 7 to 8 foot tall, it's brown or dark brown, colored hair, and it's intelligent and it's moving around and it knows the area better than any person that has ever traveled in that area before. He knows every inch of it, like Les said. Come on, man. I mean,
yeah.
They can stay hidden and never be found. And, you know, I think sightings happen by accident, and I think there's very
few. And, you know, these people's like, well, I've never seen one. Let me tell you something, man. You're looking for one thing, one being, one creature in miles of forest and trees.
Right.
You know, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack. You know, it's luck that you do have encounters and do have audios and sometimes perhaps even
right.
sightings.
Right. I'll even take it a step further. It's not just a needle in a haystack. You're looking for a moving needle in a haystack.
Exactly.
With heightened senses, heightened smell and sight and hearing that doesn't want to be found.
Exactly. And I think curiosity brings them closer to humanity when we are out there. They're curious, and so they're, you know, and that I think that's, like I said, accidentally they get seen or you encroach upon their particular area a little bit too much, and they allow you to see them in order to make you leave, you know, that kind of thing.
Then there's also the occasional where you actually surprise them and sneak up on them, like in a couple of my cases.
Right, and I think there's a couple of very few incidences or reported incidences where someone went intentionally into the forest looking for a Sasquatch or Bigfoot and actually succeeded in that. And that goes back to, and the most famous, of course, is the Patterson-Gimlin film. That was pure luck. But I think that in my personal opinion, and I don't think it has to be anybody else's, but it's mine, I think that they actually filmed the Sasquatch at that time. I've talked with Bob Gimlin, and I've seen everything and heard everything, and
I found that the best responses that you get are when you're just out there, kind of, whether you're out there researching or investigating or not, whether you're actually looking, if you do not give off the appearance that you're looking, you have better chances
right.
of having an encounter and an interaction. In other words, if you're just out there kind of doing your normal thing, acting completely normal, then your chances
right.
are greatly increased.
Right. And, you know, and I was going to say, you know, when Johnny Holmes and I went to this area here on the Trinity River a couple weeks ago, just to put out the game camera, when we started encountering, you know, this road that we went down, all of a sudden we've got trees and brush and vines and everything else from different directions. You know, you have some coming from the right, some coming from the left, pushed across the road.
Right.
You know, it kind of, you start going, okay, so we had to walk in, and when we got back there, you know, it just really, everything stopped, you know. But we were just walking. We weren't doing anything in particular.
Exactly.
You know?
I mean, that's kind of what I do when I go out there. I just walk. If it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't, you know. Going out there, we've talked about this so many times, I really don't want to get in, but, you know, just be yourself when you're out there, you know, doing all the calls and wood knocks and whatever, that rarely ever works for me.
Right. Well, I have to say that when we get to Falk, you'll see what I'm saying is we have a set way that we do things that we have found to be successful. We've had success with it. And
yeah, but see, you're blasting. You're blasting what is pretty much known as real recorded Sasquatch sounds. You know, unlike a human, I think there's a major difference. You know what I'm saying? When a human goes and tries to do a Sasquatch sound, and when an actual Sasquatch recording, there's a major difference there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And here's the other thing I wanted to point out. You know, you're going to get the argument, well, we don't know what that recording is saying. It may be a big, it may be a Sasquatch, but you don't know what that vocalization is telling.
That's
true. What other Sasquatch, and that's absolutely the truth. We don't know. But here's the key. It doesn't matter. All you're wanting to do.
You will never know if you don't try.
But here's the key to it. The key is it doesn't matter because all you're after as a researcher is getting some kind of a response. It doesn't matter what your recording is saying to them or anything else, whatever those vocalizations mean or whatever. It doesn't matter. What you're wanting is to elicit some kind of a response because you've
That's
got your recorders and your parabolic dishes running and ready to go if something answers back.
That's right.
And that's what you're after.
And it goes all the way back to what Les said himself at the beginning of the show. If you don't go out there, you're never going to know. I try all kind of shit when I'm out there, dude. You know, I've tried singing. I've walked through there just waving. I've walked through there, you know, saying my own name. In theory that if I hear something say my name back, it kind of rules out any other animal, you know? And that's based on the fact that these creatures are able to have some form of communication. You never know. You know,
right.
you don't know what's going to work unless you try it.
Right, right. And, you know, and the thing of it is I've got some really cool stuff that, you know, that R. Scott Nelson has put out there about the Sierra sounds.
Right.
Pardon me. And you know, about the language thing. And one of the things that I think we're going to try is using some of those, what we call in the samurai chatter, to see if that will elicit some kind of a response. We don't know that it will, but, hey, we got to try it. And I can tell you two separate stories about what you were just talking about. Saying your name out loud. Saying your name out loud. I'll tell this story real quick. Darren Lee, who is the director of the Mid-America Bigfoot Research Center in Oklahoma, his wife, Bobby, and him were with the group, and they were on a research trip, and they took their grandson, and his nickname is Izzy. I don't know why, but that's, you know. So during the day, when the guys were out looking around and following the trails and stuff through the mountains, looking for tracks or looking for tree breaks or, looking, she stayed at camp with this 4-year-old little boy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're a parent, and you know 4-year-old little boys are going to be playing, and they're going to be getting into this and getting into that.
Right.
And so Bobby spent most of the day saying, Izzy, don't touch that. Izzy, don't, you know, Izzy, get out of there. Izzy, come back over here. You know, Izzy, you know, all day long. So later that evening, after they had done whatever it was they were doing research-wise, and they come back to camp and everything, everybody turns in and goes to bed about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. Bobby is awakened by a noise up on the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And she sits up in the tent, and she's listening, and she starts hearing this very loud voice saying, Izzy, Izzy. You know, it was repeating what she had said all day long.
Yeah.
Izzy, Izzy,
I've,
Izzy.
I've heard numerous reports like that. Guys, we have 1 minute left on air. We're going to go ahead and continue, though, because we can continue into the recording session, the archive section, if you will.
Sure, yeah.
For another hour. But, you know, those listening, I appreciate you tuning in. I appreciate you listening. I had a great time, had a great show.
Awesome.
I hope you guys enjoyed it. We're going to go ahead and continue our discussions, and I'll post the complete audio later tonight or tomorrow where you can listen to what we're going to be saying in the next hour.
Right. And thank you, everybody. It was great having Les on, and you're going to love it.
Thank you, guys, for having me, too.
Oh, you're welcome,
yeah,
Jeff.
You're
awesome
welcome.
Having you, man.
So, you know, as I was saying, I've read many, many reports similar to what you just described.
Yeah, and even R. Scott Nelson had a similar incident happen to him when he went with Ron Moorhead up into the Sierras to do some research, because he was going to take him to the actual camp area where those original recordings were done back in the early 70s. And while they were on the trek on horseback going up to that camp, R. Scott Nelson had it, had his name yelled at him from, you know, up in the forest, which he said, you know, it really shook him to the core to know that something had been watching them and following them this entire time and had picked up on his name and was yelling it out. So it's kind of a weird thing, but he's a linguist. I mean, it's an interesting thing. So if I were you, I'd keep doing that.
Well, that's what I'm saying, you know. I stress this so much with so many people. And Michael, I know you know. Jeff, you too. I know you've heard. You listen to enough shows. Use common sense. You know, when you're out there, just use a little common sense. Think, what would they be doing? How would they react? You know, it's not rocket science, really. You know, you're dealing with a creature who, like a fugitive, wants to remain hidden, but also like a dog is very curious. So I mean, hell, there was one night I was out there, excuse me, and I had my bat, and I was flipping the bat. I wasn't even thinking. I was just walking. You know, it was kind of, you know, I had some activity, but for the most part, it was kind of a dead night. So I was just walking, and I was flipping the bat in my hand, you know, end over end. And just all of a sudden, I got this feeling, and I turned, you know, with my headlamp, I turned to my left, and not far off in the distance, there was the eye shine looking and hid behind a tree just that quick, watching me do that, watching me twirl that bat.
Right.
And you know, like I said, most normal animals, you know, we've had this discussion. Most normal animals will watch you. They might look away, but as soon as you make another sound, they're going to look right back at you. You know, normal wildlife.
Right.
That's what they do.
And Les said it a while ago when he was on air. Anytime you go in the woods, you're being watched. It may be just by the spider that's sitting on the limb.
That's right.
But you're being watched.
That's right. You know, so that's why I feel, in my opinion, certain animals might be more active at night. But here's the hardcore truth to it. If there is a predatory animal out there, chances are there's a predatory animal out there during the day too. And whether it's day or night, if that predatory animal is hungry enough, it's going to come after you. It doesn't matter night. It doesn't matter day.
Right. Right.
You know, if it sees you and is watching you, just because you don't see it, you can bet your ass that animals in the woods know that you're in the woods.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's like I've always said about going out research trips. I used to, you know, it was you know, we were all camoed out and you used the no scent and this, that, and the other and blah blah blah, and you know, you just got to the point where it's like, wait a second, you know. They know we're here long before we know they're here.
That's right. You know, it's like I go out there research and I smoke cigarettes. Yeah, I'm trying to quit, but you know, I smoke cigarettes while I'm out there. And some people are like, well, that's not good. I'm like, they know you're there, man. I'm like, here's the thing. There, if you're out there in the woods, Michael, and you're used to just no smell, just clean fresh air, and all of a sudden you smell a smell that doesn't belong, like a cigarette.
Exactly.
You're going to come in and check it out.
What is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, and the thing of it is, it's the thing that there's so many different arguments and things about that. And I said, you know, talking about cigarette smoke, the operative word there is smoke. And if you're talking about something that lives in the woods, and that's their home, that's their living room, and then all of a sudden they smell smoke, whether it's cigarette smoke or whether it's fire or whatever. But they're associating, they know that fire is bad.
It's
going to
get
home.
Them moving. Yeah, it's going to get them moving. Either to come and investigate or to move to a different location.
Right. Hey, I wanted to kind of jump subject. Not jump subject, but I saw something that was posted. It was on Onyx or if it was one of the other Facebook pages, and somebody had asked, and we talked about
dude, you mean to tell me you're looking at other Facebook pages? What is wrong with you?
Oh, yeah, man. I'm all over the place, bro. we talked about Lyle's book, The Beast of Boggy Creek, which is an awesome book, and if you haven't gotten it, you need to go to his website and pick one up. It's really an awesome book. There was a guy that had asked the question, what nonfiction books about Sasquatch, Bigfoot were out there that would be good reading? And I just wanted to kind of throw this out there really quick. I know that, Brian, you don't have a lot of, these books. I don't know if Jeff does. But if anybody out there wants some really good reading, they can go to Hancock House Publishers. That's HancockHouse.com, and they have a thing on there you can look up, and it's it talks about cryptids and Bigfoot, Sasquatch, and you can look at all the books that they carry. But some of them are reprints of some really amazing books, like John Green, his book Sasquatch: The Apes Among Us. Tom Powell wrote one called The Locals, which is a really good book, and Grover Krantz's book, Bigfoot, Sasquatch Evidence. In Search of Giants by Thomas Steinberg. Just some really cool books. There's actually the book that Roger Patterson wrote. And a lot of people don't know that Roger Patterson wrote a book, and he wrote it before he had the famous 1967 film. Chris Murphy, who wrote Meet the Sasquatch, along with John Green and Thomas Steinberg, redid the book. It's the original Roger Patterson book called The Abominable Snowman of Do the Abominable Snowman of America Really Exist? And he has put a subsequent follow-up to that in that book, The Bigfoot Film Controversy. So those are some books, if anybody out there is listening that want to get some nonfiction books about Bigfoot, Sasquatch, there you go. Sorry, I just wanted to throw that out there.
No, that's cool, man. That's cool. And you said the name.
Hey, guys, I got to duck out. Brian, you guys, I forgot at 10 o'clock here I have a meeting with actually my finance guys late to now.
Jeff, give me a call when you can.
I'll do it. And both of you, thank you so much. I very much appreciate it. I don't want to be rude here. I got to go.
No, it's fine, man.
Jeff,
we're about ready to wrap it up anyway, I believe.
Right, yeah.
Thanks for calling in and coming on board, and thanks for, the offer with Les.
Oh, thank you so much. I only intended just to stop in and say hi, so I've had a really good time here, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you soon.
It's been a pleasure,
okay,
Jeff. I'm going to be looking for my creature replicas soon.
Hey, you guys—the very first ones we get—they're yours.
All right, I appreciate it, buddy. Have a great night, man.
Talk to you soon. Thank you so much,
Michael. Man, once again, dude. Seriously, great job, man. I mean, I can't thank you enough, man. That's awesome. That's awesome. Now we got a plan on who to get next.
Now it's all, don't look at it this way, but it's all a downhill slide from here.
What do you mean?
No, man, I was like, you
got to
top yourself. You got to top it. You got to go bigger and bigger every time.
I know, and that's a hard task. I'm telling you.
Oh man, I'm sure you could probably get Bobo or Moneymaker or somebody on here, could you?
Shit, they will never be on my show, buddy. No, that's not gonna happen, man. I don't want to lose the credibility that we have.
I enjoy your show. I enjoy what you do and how you do it. And I was glad I could help out and in some small way. And I hope that the audience, that I hope the numbers are really big, and I hope that everybody enjoyed the show. Because it was a lot of fun for me to be a part of it with Les and with you and Jeff.
We were worried that you wouldn't be able to, you know, come on originally because you thought you might have had a prior date.
Yeah, things kind of shifted on me and changed, and I was like, well, I mean, that kind of frees me up to do the show. Although I was disappointed that I didn't get to see my son play football tonight, but he's got a lot more games to go, and I'm going to be traveling to go see those, and so it's all good. And he understood, I'm very proud of him. So anytime I get to spend with him, it's really cool. So next week's another week.
Everything works out a certain way.
And before I go, I wanted to compliment you on taking the moment of silence for those that we lost 13 mm-hmm. years ago in 9/11, and say that subsequently, I'm not talking about the people that the soldiers and stuff that have been lost since 9/11 because of what happened that day, but the firefighters and the first responders and the people that have in subsequent years after 9/11 have gone through severe medical issues, and some of those folks we have lost have passed away because of what happened that day. Those families are still, whether people think about it or not, 13 years later, a lot of those families are still going through it every day.
Oh, yeah.
So keep them in your prayers. Don't forget.
You know, regardless of what anyone believes or who they think was behind it or whatever, lives were still lost, needlessly.
Exactly.
That's what matters to me,
Exactly. And, it's one of those things. I actually had a conversation with my stepson this afternoon, and he's only 16 years old. So I mean, he was 3, and doesn't remember it at all. And it just kind of struck me as there's a whole generation of kids now that are getting ready to be juniors or seniors in high school. They don't remember 9/11 as you and I do.
Well, like my stepson, he's 16 as well, and all day yesterday, he was texting me, worried that something was going to go down today because, these kids, they spread these rumors at school and everything.
Right.
And I told him, I said, look, man, I said, first of all, I don't think they're going to be interested in our Podunk Town High School, secondly, they would be foolish to try anything again on 9/11 because that day, more than any day of the year, America's going to be on its guard.
Oh yeah, I had a friend of mine that's tapped into the military still that informed me. He was like, he's on Fort Bliss, has been on high alert since Monday. And he said subsequently, most military bases and most installations have been on high alert for the past week,
yep.
leading up to 9/11. I mean, so
this time of the year, September 11th, is probably the safest week, if you will, throughout the year, in my opinion, because everyone remembers 9/11, everyone knows what happened, and everyone's going to be watching and on their guard. So, yeah, it would be foolish for a terrorist or anybody to try anything again on 9/11.
Well, you know, and like I said, it's these guys that I have nothing but complete and utter respect for firefighters, especially, and police officers especially, but firefighters really, because, you know, these guys, they are the ones that rush into a burning building when everybody else is running out. And, you know, those the firefighters that were lost, and then you think about the firefighters.
A lot of times they're volunteers. A lot of times they're not even getting paid for it.
Exactly. I was watching. I have a DVD called 9/11. It was the two French brothers, Jules and Gideon Naudé. They were actually filming a documentary about firefighters in New York when 9/11 happened. And of course, one brother was actually in Tower One filming, and the other brother was out. Everybody survived. They survived. But it's an amazing documentary. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it.
I think I have, actually.
I found something online earlier today. It was when they did the 10-year anniversary, and they caught up with a lot of, and subsequently a couple of the firefighters that were featured from that fire department have passed away from cancer that was directly traced back to
the
stuff that was in the air that they were breathing for several weeks while they were down there digging through the rubble. And some of those guys have gone through PTSD and it's an ongoing thing with these guys. So when we say remember 9/11, it's not just talking about remembering the events of that day. It's remembering those who were lost, those who jumped in and tried to help, and those that are still fighting with physical and emotional battles to this day, 13 years later. So
that's right.
I appreciate what you did, man. It was really cool. And it's a shame that it's one of those things, like you just remember where you were standing and what was going on.
A lot of people, they ask me questions, why are you so given to everyone else? And it's because it's the right thing to do. It's the human thing to do. You know, if the rest of the world was the same way, we wouldn't have half the problems that we have. You know, it's just the right thing to do. You know, we're all on the same boat, you know, trying to get to a port.
And the thing of it you think back about things in your life, and I've always tried to be kind to other people. I've always tried to be honest with other people. I've tried to do the right things in life. I've not always been successful at those things, but I've always tried. And like you said, if everybody would just try, we would have a much, much better world to live in than we do right now. But I don't ever give up hope. I think that having faith and knowing where I stand, I think it's a good thing. So I hope everybody that's been listening feels the same way. Pretty sure they do.
Yeah, we have to care for one another. You know, if you're around, if you're around someone who doesn't, and walk away from them. You know, don't let those people be vampiristic and bring you down into their world, into their level.
Yeah, I found out something as in my profession, it's all about attitude, and it's all about how you look at yourself and how you think. And I had a good friend of mine one time. His name is Glenn Morshower, and you may not know the name, but I guarantee you know the face. He's been in a lot of major, big-time movies, and he was a regular on the original TV show 24, and he's from Dallas. And one time I said something to him about being a starving actor, and he said right there, he stopped me, and he said, "You're not a starving actor. You're just an actor. You're not a struggling actor. You're an actor." And it was, and he went into this whole thing about speaking positivity in your life. If you say negative things are going to come to you. If you say positive things, and it's the same with people. If you're with positive people, positive things are going to happen. If you're with negative people, negative things are going to happen. And but the more you spread in a positive light to people, the more positive people will be there. You know, and it changes people. So I just try to be positive and good to people, and like a helping you out with the show. It was my pleasure to do that. And, you know, it was a positive, good thing, man. And I'm just going to keep the ball rolling.
You know, you and I were talking earlier today, and I told you that, you know, having this show has been real therapeutic for me, and it has. I mean, it really has. It's helped, and I wouldn't say made me cocky. It's kind of boosted my confidence a lot, and my communicative skills with other people. Because for a while there, I was pretty much a shut-in. And, you know, being able to talk, albeit I'm not in a large group of people or I'm not face-to-face, it makes it a little bit easier to where now when I go out publicly, I'm more capable of interaction face-to-face.
Yeah. And as long as everything is always on a positive note, you know, and like you said, if somebody's being negative, just, you know, smile. Turn and walk away, and you know, and continue your positive day. And then I find in the world of research, more often than not, the people that you're going to run into are positive, and they're good people. You're going to have your asses.
Oh yeah, I know, you know? One of them.
And,
right off the bat.
But that's in every walk of life, and it doesn't matter if it's research or if it's acting or if it's if you're a banker or if you're a deli chef or whatever. You're going to find people that are just not happy, and they're not positive, and they're not, you know, and they're going to be an ass.
I feel like a weight has been relieved because I'm doing something that I love to do. I'm being myself. I'm being true to myself, and the benefits from it are far greater. And you know, it kind of makes me reflect a lot on, you know, previously before all this, and it's like, well,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Maybe this is how I should have been all along. You know,
well, sure, and you know, I like getting out like you do. I like getting out in the woods. I like getting out there because it's. Even if you don't have anything happen when you're researching, you're in the woods, man. You're in nature, and it's beautiful.
And you're getting in touch with yourself. You know, that's the most important. You're getting in touch with yourself.
Yeah, you can reflect on things and think about things, and your mind gets clear. But it's the beauty of nature itself. You know, you can step back and look at the beauty of a tree or a bird or whatever, and just enjoy, and you can sit in complete silence and just listen to, you know, and it's really, that part of it is very therapeutic.
Oh, yeah.
And helps you, and I say that for anybody, whether you have day-to-day problems or not, you know, just get out and go out into the woods and just sit there and relax.
Definitely.
You know, let the tensions of the world go and just enjoy what you're seeing and hearing. And who knows, you know, you may be sitting there and all of a sudden you get to, you know, you get yourself a once-in-a-lifetime shot at seeing something that a lot of people say doesn't exist.
That's right.
Who knows?
But like we said so many times before, you will never know unless you do it. You will never know unless you get out there.
I was so glad that Les said it the way he said it, you know, being skeptical. You can be skeptical. That's fine. But don't be closed-minded enough to sit on your couch and sit there and go, oh, there's no way. There's no way. There's no way.
Well, see, that's what a lot of people don't realize. For the most part, now you are some people who, you know, you do have some people who think that everything is a Sasquatch, you know. But for the most part, the researchers that I know that I interact with, we're the biggest skeptics ourselves, you know, because we want to prove that it was a Sasquatch or what it could have been. So we're the biggest skeptics ourselves. If we were not skeptical ourselves, then what we do would really have no meaning, because we'd be those types where everything is Sasquatch. There's 50 Sasquatch in every picture of the woods, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's what I was saying. You know, we were talking about the Patterson film. I don't relish trying to find, you know, and somebody asked John Green one time if he thought that this had to do with anything with UFOs or this, that, and the other. And his statement was very plain and very clear. He said, I don't find any romance or any glory in trying to explain one mystery by introducing another mystery.
Another. That's right. That's
let's,
exactly
let's deal
right.
with this one. Yeah, let's deal with this one right here first, the one that's in front of you, the one that you're dealing with, without trying to bring in all these other aspects that these things are shapeshifters and they can do this, interdimensional. Those are mysteries within themselves, and there's no glory in trying to explain this mystery by introducing a whole host of other ones.
They do not do any of that. Believe me, they do not do any of that. Don't fall for all that. You know, it's like this whole zapping thing that's been going around a lot lately. I've never felt that experience. I say that these people, you know, they might see a Sasquatch, they might get just really nervous and their adrenaline take over. That's more what I think it is than actual zapping.
Right.
Of course, there could be more than one time. But here's the thing you got to remember. All the stuff that is attributed to a Sasquatch that Sasquatch can supposedly do, no other living creature on the planet can do.
Right.
You know? So why in the hell will we think a Sasquatch can do it?
Now, there is one thing that I do. I don't say I believe in it 100%, but I do think there is something to it. And I've had people who have had experiences talk about this, and where they all of a sudden they had the sudden overwhelming feeling of dread and fear. Everything was fine, you know, 2 minutes ago, but now all of a sudden there is this sense of impending doom and fear and nausea and headaches and all, you know, all this other stuff, and you know, in association with either a sighting or you know, they've heard vocals or they've heard tree knocks but again
that can be contributed to adrenaline as well. You know,
right.
your mind overthinking and you know, because hell, how many times have you been, you know, I used to go out in the graveyards and stuff a lot too, doing that type of paranormal stuff, and you kind of build yourself to that level.
Well, sure.
You know,
yeah.
where every little twig, every little noise, every little twig snap, it scares the crap out of you. And again, that's adrenaline. And I can go into something else, the whole religious aspects of it, but I won't, we won't talk about that. But something very similar happens in religion and to religious people. Right.
And that's I know where you're going. I see where you're going. What I was gonna touch base on was something that is known in the natural world that some animals do, especially elephants, and that is infrasound.
Right.
And it is extremely low frequency sounds. Even our military. The Department of Defense actually worked with infrasound, and they found that infrasound can cause
We have the weapons. They use it for riot control.
It causes that sense of fear. It can cause nausea, headaches. It can cause that sense of impending doom. And all those kind of things, infrasound can do that. Well, we know that elephants use infrasound to communicate with one another. So we know that's in the natural world. So
but see, that's how it should be described. It shouldn't be described as zapping, like they have some high telepathy, Professor X shit.
Oh yeah,
Right.
And it shouldn't be put out that way, but it should be put. Is there a possibility that they may have the ability to do a low-frequency kind of a growl that we can't hear with the ears, not in the natural sense like you would hear a bird or a car or a truck horn or something like that, or even a scream, but just something that's a low-frequency type thing that would affect you?
You throw that in with overwhelming fear and adrenaline, because I don't care who you are. I don't care who you are. If you see one, especially at night, it's going to scare the shit out of you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing, people say and you associate that with the smell that they put off. And gorillas are known to have a scent gland under their arms, much like a skunk has a scent gland, and if they're in a territorial fight or if they're in a situation with another clan of gorillas, and they can actually put off this scent that's very putrid, and it will drive other gorillas or other animals or people to make people leave. Or to make others leave, it's a defense mechanism, and that's another thing that's in the natural world that we know exists. Can you attribute that to a Sasquatch? Well, that's a possibility. I'm not saying that that's fact, and I'm not saying it's fact about infrasound. I'm saying it's a possibility, and you can add those in there. But to say that they're interdimensional people or that they are have mental telepathy, or that they have, or they can, materialize and dematerialize, and all this other stuff. I'm sorry.
It's people trying to sensationalize them.
Yeah, they're trying to. That's ultimate science fiction. So, I think I tend to stay more with the natural world order of things. That they're flesh and blood animals or creatures or hominids.
I can't attest to this. They don't always smell.
I don't think that they always smell either.
I've had encounters where I didn't smell anything. I've been out there in the woods where I smell strange smells and not seen anything. So
right.
I don't know.
I had one encounter, one time, in Sam Houston National Forest with myself and Scott Kessler and Donnie Wade. where we had that stink put on us. I mean, it was very prevalent. It wasn't there until we started hearing the chatter and we had limbs being snapped off and thumping noises and all kinds of stuff. There was of them, and they were trying to get us to leave.
Yeah, they do that.
And so when we were in a turkey blind, and when we set up, that smell just hit us like a ton of bricks, and it was horrible. But I've had other encounters or other times when I know that there was one that we didn't smell anything.
Yeah.
But, you know, just like you. So
who knows? It could be different types. You know, there's a theory that there's different types. So we don't know. Maybe only one sex smells.
Right.
You know, maybe it's, and, maybe
you know,
it's
and the thing is, I always
maybe
throw this out there too. That everything that we're saying, every single thing we're saying about Bigfoot, Sasquatch, whatever, is all speculative at best. We don't know. And anybody, whether they're on TV or not, that sits and makes these declarative statements, well, that's what Bigfoot does. Well, how do you know?
Exactly. We don't know. It's like I said many times. There are no experts, you know, other than the Sasquatch themselves at this point.
Exactly.
You know, what we're doing is we're applying certain circumstances and situations that happen at the same time as maybe a sighting, or at the same time as maybe some type of audio, and we're applying that to the Sasquatch. Do we know with 100% certainty? No. Because we're not seeing them do this stuff like tree breaks. We're not there watching them do it. You know, is it coincidental? Yeah. You know?
Right.
Could it?
I mean, I've only talked to one guy that actually saw or witnessed a Sasquatch making a vocalization.
Yeah.
And all the, and everybody I've ever talked to, I've only met one guy who actually witnessed it.
You know, I don't know if I told you this or not, but I spoke with a guy a couple of weeks ago who has been to the area that I live in, and he was telling me that he had a Sasquatch encounter in this area, and he went on to describe what happened, and he described where. I mean, he described it in detail, and here's the funny thing about it. What he described is the exact area that I have my activity. I mean, he described it to a T, from where to walk, how far to walk, what kind of hill was there. Yeah, he described it to a T, the exact same area that I have all my activity and have had for years. And his encounter happened years ago as well.
And isn't that interesting? That,
and I never,
you know,
told
here he was talking
the exact location.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, isn't that cool though?
It's very cool.
I mean, isn't that really? It's very cool.
Further validation for me.
Right.
And he described the exact same sounds that I've heard that I've been out there with my family and they've heard. You know.
Right.
He described it to a T, and I was like, "Holy crap!"
Yeah, and you know, the cool thing is, I want to tell you this just because. The interesting thing is that I had the same kind of thing happen on, if you go to the website and you have all the recordings, but you saw the pictures of the tracks that we found, and you've heard the cough recording and you've heard some of the other stuff. Well, that all happened in a one particular area on the Neches River. And, several years ago, and you're going to get to meet this guy, he sent in a report of something that had happened on the Neches River 20 years ago. And through just looking at where he was talking about this road number and that area, we figured out that he was less than half a mile from where we had been having all this activity.
Yeah, that's
you know, recently.
That's exactly what I'm saying, you know, when... Excuse me. Oh, man, getting late. When you have experiences like that that kind of coincide with each other, and it's pretty much along the same lines, you know, that's more than a coincidence.
Yeah, and I dug further and found a written report by another group that happened back even further than his incident. So that was maybe a mile further to the east on the other side of the river. So here we're talking about, we're getting all this experiences and stuff and all this stuff happening in this one area over a period of about 3 or 4 years, and like from 2007 to 2010, we're having all this experience stuff, and then here comes this guy that tells us about an experience that he had back in the early 90s, you know, and then I go digging and find that there's two or three other reports that came back from the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, just you know, a mile away. So that whole area, that just is validation, like you said, it's validation of what you're experiencing. So, well, man, I know you're yawning, and it's been a great show.
I didn't mean any disrespect or anything. It's just been
No. I enjoyed it. I'm glad that I was able to help get Les on, and anytime you need me, brother, I'm there. So
I hear you. And I appreciate you coming on, and I appreciate you, you know, getting Les on, and we'll definitely be having him back on. I'll send you my contact information, and you can forward it to him. But you know, 2 weeks, I'll be there, man. We'll be hanging out together and going out there in the woods and having a great time.
I'm looking forward to it. It's gonna be a lot of fun up there. So.
Oh, definitely. I'm excited about it as well. Well, all right, Michael, thank you again, and you have a great night, buddy.
You too, and everybody out there that's listening, have a great night.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
All right.
All right, that'll do it for us tonight. Great show. I appreciate everybody listening in. We had a great time, and look forward to... having you guys listen in next week. I'm going to have Tim Sermons and Bob Garrett on. Should be a great show. Thanks again. Have a great night.